Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, supported by Autolus, we spoke with Aaron Logan, MD, PhD, and Bijal Shah, MD, MS, about the evolving use of obecabtagene autoleucel in the relapsed refractory B-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia treatment paradigm. In our conversation, Drs. Logan and Shah discussed where obe-cel currently fits into the BALL treatment paradigm, how the use of this agent might expand going forward, and what the future looks like for the broader CAR T-cell therapy development field in ALL. Thank you, Dr. Logan and Dr. Shah, for taking the time to speak with us today on an episode of Onc Live On Air. Just to start off, could you briefly discuss how the FDA approval of obe-cel has impacted the treatment paradigm for patients with relapsed refractory ALL?
Well, obe-cel is a unique CAR T-cell because it has a lower toxicity profile than we see with brexucel, also known as Tecartus. And this likely is a result of some changes between obe-cel and brexucel, including the way the CAR T-cells recognize the leukemia cells. It has a different targeting molecule. Called Cat19 instead of the FMC63 that's used in brexucel and other CAR T cells. And that leads to a more physiologic reaction between the CAR T cells and the leukemia cells, and hopefully not overstimulate the CAR T cells and lead to this massive cytokine release. Additionally, obe-cel is co-stimulated by what's called 4-1BB, whereas brexucel, the other CAR T-cell for adults, is stimulated by CD28, which is associated with more cytokine release. And then obe-cel took the unique approach of splitting the dose based on how many leukemia cells were present in the bone marrow at the time of starting the lymphodepleting chemotherapy, and giving a lower dose to patients that had a higher leukemic burden. And all of this put together ended up being associated with a very, very favorable profile in terms of toxicity, very low cytokine release syndrome and very low neurotoxicity, which really distinguishes it from brexucel. So I think that this does change the barrier to proceeding to CAR T cells, because we will be less concerned. We are less concerned about the toxicity than we were with brexucel. So we may use CAR T cells earlier in some patients, and maybe use it in patients who we thought were potentially not well suited for brexucel because of the toxicities. So I do think that this is going to lead to earlier and more frequent therapy with CAR T cells for patients with relapsed refractory B-cell ALL.
So then, since this agent has been approved, how have you implemented it into your clinical practice, and how has that changed things for the patients who have been able to receive it?
So, you know, we have used it now 7 times internally. I did send one patient out to University of Pennsylvania, where they have a bloodless CAR T program. This individual was a Jehovah's Witness and wanted to make sure that they had all the support that they needed for that. So, you know, we've got sort of 8 in our database, and we're working within what's called the ROCA Consortium to capture and categorize those outcomes. And you'll see an updated ASH this year, I hope, across the entire consortium now looking at our obe-cel experience. But it's been a good experience. I mean, a great experience. I mean, I don't think that there's anything really that's going to come out as surprising. We saw very little ICANS. We saw very little cytokine release syndrome. We did see some patients have very slow recovery of counts. Again, all what we might expect with the obe-cel product. But, you know, no one has passed away from this. You know, we're not seeing that, you know, severe life-threatening infections, those kinds of things. We're pretty aggressive about prophylaxis for these individuals and making sure we carry them through safely. I would say that where have we mainly been using it? You know, in the beginning, because of this lower toxicity profile, we have focused on those who might be older or more frail, right? Those with more comorbidities. And we have also treated a few patients who had prior brexucel, actually. We wanted to see whether using a different CAR T-cell product may prove less immunogenic. So we may be able to come in and get a deeper response that way. And I will say we did see some very deep responses doing that. So it's been, again, a good experience. I think nothing negative I can say. What we need to see, though, is whether those responses are durable. And I think that's going to be the next step. And, you know, when we talk about, again, this sort of CAR-on-CAR approach, and this is important, right? Because we're talking about how we develop a whole new field of CARs that are coming you know, even after obe-cel, you know, bicistronic and tandem CARs and you name it, you know, what does CAR on CAR mean? What can we anticipate? And I think responses, it's really good to see deep, and I mean clonoSEQ negative MRD remissions when you do CAR on CAR, but really trying to understand whether those will be durable is the next big question. We're still learning. And so I don't have any data to give you that either that way, but we're still learning. Again, all of the patients, despite being older, despite having comorbidities, did quite well. We're trying to learn what to do for the Philadelphia positive patients. And I had delivered a talk at EHA that was a review, essentially, of CAR T-cell therapy for ALL. And, you know, we saw on Zuma 3, we only had 4 patients who resumed or started a new TKI after CAR T-cell therapy. And so too few patients from really to make any conclusions. I think for obe-cel, it was a much higher number. And we need to wait and see. I think that there probably is a benefit with continuing or starting a new TKI after CAR T. And the reason I say that is we have one other data set that we can point to, and that's the ROCA data set. Again, that real world consortium data, where patients who resumed or started a new TKI after CAR T seem to be doing better in terms of the durability of their responses. And so I think when we kind of pull all these data together, what we're going to find is this is an important thing to do. How long? What dose? These are all things that I think questions we're going to be asking for a little while. We will have kind of a phase 1 dose escalation study looking at asciminib, but I don't mean to imply that that's the only approach. Imatinib, we have olverimatinib coming around the corner. I think there's another one with just a sequence of letters and numbers coming. So there's a few out there that we'll be able to explore, and the importance here being novel TKIs that the patient may not have seen. And so what you heard me say about obe-cel, to really kind of crystallize, you know, the answer to your question, where we've been using it is mainly in those who have comorbidities, who are older. We've been using it in patients who previously exposed to brexucabtagene, so prior autologous CAR T-cell therapy. And we're really asking questions about the Ph-positive patient population because, by the way, with obe-cel, those patients had a better outcome for reasons, again, we can only speculate, but possibly having to do with this role of TKI maintenance after the CAR.
So, I mean, there's been a number of changes in the management of ALL, including the implementation of frontline immunotherapy. So we now give chemotherapy with blinatumomab or Blincyto, the CD19 bispecific antibody that helps utilize the immune system to consolidate remissions after chemotherapy. And so now most patients are going to have received both chemo and a CD19-directed immunotherapy. So when they progress after that, if they still express CD19, I think we favor moving directly to CAR T cells, and the availability of obe-cel and its favorable toxicity profile really makes that an easier decision than it may have been with brexucabtagene. And, you know, many of us will use inotuzumab ozogamicin, the antibody drug conjugate, as a bridge between the collection of the CAR T, the peripheral blood mononuclear cells to make the CAR T cells. And then while they're being manufactured, we give 1 or 2 doses of inotuzumab to decrease the disease burden. And then we give the CAR T cells. So it's not really a decision anymore between blin or ino or CAR T cells. It's chemo blin frontline. If they relapse, then using combination of ino and the CAR T cells to achieve a deep remission. And then, you know, what we're seeing with the long-term follow-up on obe-cel is there are patients, perhaps, you know, 40% of patients that remain in remission without a subsequent transplant. And what we're trying to figure out is if we can identify which patients are most likely to have durable remissions without a consolidative allotransplant after the CAR T cells. And I think we haven't fully figured that out yet. You know, there's ongoing studies trying to determine that. We don't know yet whether it will be a destination therapy only for patients who have already had a transplant before they got the CAR T cells, i.e. a post-transplant relapse treated with CAR T cells, or only patients who have favorable risk disease or who have very low disease burden. We need to figure that out because there are patients that I think probably still merit an allotransplant after the CAR T cells. Because in other analyses with brexucabtagene, in the real world, where we now have a couple of years of follow-up using it as a conventional approved therapy, in a study conducted by what's called the ROCCA Consortium, R-O-C-C-A, which is the Real World Outcomes Consortium for CAR T-cells, we do see that there's better outcomes in patients who receive Brexacel followed by an allotransplant. So there's a little bit of a difference between the clinical trial data and the real world data, and we need to figure that out. But hopefully we can identify patients who are having an early relapse after chemo blend, identify that they still express CD19, get them obe-cel, and if they meet all the right parameters, hopefully that's their destination therapy and we can avoid transplant. That would be the ideal.
What are some of the key treatment considerations when potentially selecting obe-cel for patients with ALL?
Obe-cel is generally going to be preferable to the Brexacel for most patients. To me, there's not necessarily any strong contraindication to one or the other. I do think that the toxicity profile with Brexacel is concerning, especially the neurotoxicity, which even in the real world, after the drug has become available, we still see a lot of neurotoxicity with Brexacel. We'll have to see whether we still have the same low neurotoxicity with obe-cel as we gather real world data to compare it to the clinical trial. But in our practice, most patients are probably going to get obe-cel as opposed to Brexacel, as long as the company can keep up with the manufacturing slots and the turnaround time. The few cases where we may favor Brexacel over obe-cel would be if patients have relapsed after chemo, blin, and ino and can't get into a deep remission, there might be a bit of preference for Brexacel in those high disease burden settings because it might do a little bit better than obe-cel. We don't know that because there's no comparative data, but just from what we know, obe-cel frequently doesn't do very well with particularly high disease burdens going into the CAR T-cell infusion. And it may be that the CAR T-cells are more slow to activate with the 4-1BB and this CAT1 or this CAT19 binding domain. So they can't really catch up to the leukemia if there's a high disease burden, whereas Brexacel being kind of fast on CD28 co-stimulated can catch up in some patients and eliminate the disease. So that may be a distinguishing feature, high disease burden that we're not able to otherwise decrease. But I think in most patients will favor obe-cel because it's got great toxicity profile.
So then at the 2025 ASCO annual meeting and EHA Congress, there was an additional analysis on outcomes with obe-cel from the FELIX trial that showed efficacy and safety were consistent regardless of age. So how does the findings from this impact your approach for treatment?
Well, we do know that patients of more advanced age in general are more prone to neurologic toxicities with immunotherapies in general, CAR T-cells in particular. And so where there may be a current barrier or hesitancy to use Brexacel with its very high neurotoxicity profile in patients, 65, 70 and above, I think that barrier is decreased with obe-cel because we do see that even in patients over age 65, there's still only about a 10% neurotoxicity profile, and it's typically, grade 1 to 2, very infrequently higher grade. So that, I think, opens the door to really enabling CAR T-cells irrespective of age in a way that Brexacel wasn't quite able to because it still had a significant toxicity associated with it.
And I'm going to start with the most important key word. It was safe. And this has always been the fear. And when we think about older patients with acute leukemias, I think the first big question is, what does that referral bias look like, right? Are we just not seeing older patients because they say they have leukemia, they instantly choose to go down the hospice path, and, they just never make it to our center? Well, here we can show that in an older patient population who wasn't transplanted, by the way, you were seeing these patients really receive CAR T as definitive therapy. What was the outcome? The outcome was excellent. We weren't seeing a higher rate of severe infections. We weren't seeing, a higher mortality rate. We were seeing the patients actually doing quite well. There was no significant red flag in terms of CRS or ICANS. And we know that older patients are a little more prone to ICANS, but we weren't seeing any, huge red flags. It looks safe. And my real hope is when we talk about our 65 and older patient population, we start thinking now, okay, well, if we have a safe therapy that we can apply in this situation, that it helps to resolve some of those concerns about, well, it's just not worth it. Don't bother going down the street. Don't bother going to, again, and for Florida, it's a little easier to come down the street, but I'm thinking about Omaha, right? I'm thinking, you know, where Matt Lunning practices. I think about other places where, look, we're not talking about a 15-minute, you know, drive. We're talking about, you know, it's 5-6 hours. Is it worth it? And the answer is it appears to be, at least from a safety angle. What about efficacy? Because I think that's the other part you got to, you know, capture in the same breath. And it was highly active, right? When we look at the older patient population without any subsequent therapy, a third of the patients are in ongoing continuous complete remission. And this is like with almost 2 years of follow-up, right? I mean, I think it was 22 months where we had our cutoff. I mean, it was outstanding, right? Because our normal expectation, right, for someone who's 65 and older, who's relapsed now or proven refractory to frontline therapy, that's all in the range of 5%, something like that. Right? I mean, the overall survival rates are dismal. There was a beautiful paper by Nicola Gopajay just looking at the 70 and older patient population with ALL in Germany, and you know all the efforts they made to modify chemotherapy and make all these changes. Just, I think we're talking about frontline, and we were still talking about 10-20% long-term survival. Right, we were still really struggling to improve outcomes in that patient group. You know, we turn to the mini CVD inoblina, right? These novel approaches with being developed by the MD Anderson group. But for those 70 and up, boy, we're still coming up against some serious hurdles, right? Because while we can say that the disease-free remissions are improved by virtue of novel agents, the reality is the survival is not, right? Patients are passing away from toxicity as a consequence of these agents. And so we have now an effective CAR T that's safe for patients older than 65. That we can integrate into this space, and I think that's really was the take home for this whole presentation. I can go into response rates and all these things, but I mean, the bottom line is it was highly active, it was safe, and it had durable efficacy aside, you know, attached to it. And this is in a relapsed refractory patient population. I couldn't be more thrilled. This is where we need to be, and you know, it's as when you asked me the question earlier, how is it informed what we're already doing? You heard me say it loud and clear. We now have this opportunity, right, for older and frail patients where we can integrate CAR T cell therapy.
And then another presentation from EHA also focused on obe-cel as a potential definitive treatment without the need for allogeneic transplant. So what is your perspective on obe-cel as this potential definitive treatment here?
Again, we haven't really figured out how to identify patients who are likely to be cured with obe-cel as the therapy for their relapsed ALL. We do know that patients who had pH-positive ALL tend to do better, and that's, you know, either with or without post-CAR T-cell TKI therapy. So there seems to be something different about the biology of pH-positive ALL that's more susceptible to the effect of the obe-cel. So I think in that setting, you know, we would favor the CAR T-cells definitive therapy for relapsed disease. And typically we do give TKI maintenance afterwards. Patients who had a prior transplant and then relapsed tended to do better than patients that didn't have a prior transplant and then relapsed on the FELIX trial, suggesting that there might be something different about CAR T-cells generated from truly autologous immune cells versus allogeneic immune cells in the post-transplant setting. And I think we haven't figured this out entirely. This is just a suggestion from the FELIX trial that there might be a benefit from post-allo CAR T-cell manufacturing. Interestingly, even though we didn't see this on the ZUMA-3 trial with Brexacel, in the real world, in the ROCCA consortium, we actually do see that post-allo Brexacel appears to do better than patients who never had an allo. So there does seem to be something about using allogeneic immune cells to generate these CAR T cells that might make them work better. So post-allo would be another setting where I think we would favor CAR T cells, obe-cel, as destination therapy. And then the other setting where we see it do really well is patients who have very low disease burden, less than 5%. So if we are able to give obe-cel in a very early progression, you know, MRD progression before a fulminant relapse, that would be a setting where I think we would probably favor obe-cel as destination therapy over a post-CAR T-cell transplant.
That it depends on what you mean by definitive. If you include taking a, you know, a TKI for pH positive disease as being additional therapy, then of course, you know, there is something that comes after CAR T. It's not terribly toxic to be on a TKI, but at the same time, I will say that, you know, those who are 65 and older, you are going to have an enrichment of pH positivity in that group. And so, you know, if we're including the TKI piece, again, just to emphasize, I do think that TKIs, there may be some benefit to extending that TKI maintenance after the CAR, true with obe-cel. If we're talking about transplant, then things get a little more nuanced. And what we saw with obe-cel was that the patients who went on to transplant had worse outcomes. And, you know, worse in terms of both relapses, but also in terms of survival. And it's really hard to understand why, because the transplant is a decision made locally, right? You decide based on whatever risk features this person brings to the table, I want to do a transplant. And when you talk about these sort of biased approaches, you don't know whether you're just transplanting people who are naturally higher risk, you know, and by that virtue, you're seeing more relapses, or again, you're transplanting them because they had very poor count recovery. And so now you see this prolonged cytopenia, you try to transplant them to fix it. And now you're seeing, you know, poor survivals as a consequence of that. And so we don't really know what drove the transplant decision making. We just know that it came with worse outcomes. And so when we say it can be definitive therapy, the first thing to understand is the nuance that in this trial, transplant did come with worse outcomes. And so we really are trying to think about obe-cel as standalone therapy because we don't want to increase the risk for these individuals. So that's the first piece. Now, what if you integrate obe-cel in a low tumor burden setting, low hematotox score setting? And this is a score that I think Jay had Park had presented some data on this, and here we see much more rapid recovery of counts, and outcomes also seem to be a bit better. And here's where I would say, if you have someone with a low hematotox score and they have some very high risk molecular findings, P53 or, you know, one of these others where you have a MLL is another good example, you have a strong sense, you know what, I've got a deep remission. If I do nothing, you know, I may get a year, but the person's still going to relapse, and I want to avoid that. Then even with obe-cel, I would say, okay, well, you know what? Here's again, coming back to that nuance, you really got to think about a transplant and really think about what you do after the CAR. And so what do you hear me saying? What you hear me saying is we're going to have to get better about personalizing who benefits and who doesn't with consolidative approaches after CAR T-cell immunotherapy. And for now, genomics is the easiest way to build on that. I think that once a patient progresses to MRD positivity, probably the cat's out of the bag or the horse's out of the barn. I can't remember what the phrase is, but you know, at that point in time, you really need to do something else, you know, to get them to that allogeneic transplant. And there are very, very cool therapies. There was data that Ibrahim Aldoss presented on AZD0486, this novel bispecific antibody. We've also got sub-Q bispecific therapeutic engager from Amgen, right? So we have tools that we may be able to rescue some of these post-CAR MRD positive relapses to try and carry them to that transplant if we do choose to delay. But long story short, for very high-risk individuals who can tolerate the intensity of transplant, I do think that there's still it's still worth having that discussion. It's still worth thinking about what that means for that individual so they don't, you know, have another relapse and actually have another recurrence, because we do rarely see that as well. I mean, one of the patients I remember on the Kite CAR trial, she had a quote relapse 5 years out, but it was with a new clone. Do I chalk that up to the failure of CAR? No. I mean, you know, that I don't want CARs to stick around for 5 years. Okay. I mean, I chalk that up to the fact that you know, there's a reason why she developed ALL the first time. There's a reason why she developed ALL the second time. There's something that's just, you know, genetically present that, that's going to drive those relapses. And again, this is where I'm talking about integration of,
my transplanters hate it when I say this, but stem cell replacement therapy.
So is there a potential bigger role for obe-cel and CAR T-cell therapy in ALL beyond the current use of these treatments in the relapsed refractory setting?
Yeah, so like any therapy in any cancer, you always start with relapsed refractory patients, then you try and move it up to earlier lines of therapy. So I think what we've seen in the ALL space is chemotherapy plus blinatumomab dramatically improves their survival, even for patients who have a great response to chemotherapy. So the next iteration of that would be to see, can we debulk the leukemia and then give CAR T cells as a consolidation as opposed to blinatumomab? And since obe-cel has durability, it it lasts in the patient's body for potentially a long time, that might be a quick role for definitive debulking followed by CAR T-cell, and that's all the patients need. So I think that'll be the next thing that we need to explore is frontline obe-cel. And then in the pH-positive setting, we already know that frontline blinatumomab with a TKI can lead to very, very high disease-free survival rates. Could we accomplish the same thing with TKI debulking followed by a CAR T-cell with or without post-CAR T-cell TKI and maybe cure pH-positive ALL in a majority of patients with very short course of therapy? So I think really moving this to an earlier front line of therapy is the next step. And, you know, it may take what used to be years of therapy on these very complex chemotherapy regimens that we've used and consolidate it down to maybe a couple of months of some chemo to debulk followed by a CAR T cell. And that's all some patients might need. And that would be fantastic, because then, you know, our young patients who are kind of, you know, pulled out of their life, taking care of their families or doing their work, could re-enter their productive work life, their family life much quicker. And that would be really fantastic for patients.
And then are there any novel CAR T-cell therapy approaches being investigated in ALL that have caught your eye?
Now, initially, we had a lot of hope in CAR T-cells that targeted other antigens like CD22, or even making CAR T-cells that targeted more than one antigen at a time, like CD19 and CD22. I think so far, those studies have not really demonstrated that that's a better approach than using a single, you know, antigen CD19 targeted CAR T-cell. So I think there's still some room to identify how to make CAR T-cells that target multiple antigens, mainly for the purpose of preventing what we call antigen escape variants, where they lose expression of the CD19 if you put a lot of pressure on that antigen, and then the leukemia kind of evolves and stops expressing it due to differences in the way it expresses the RNA, for instance. If we could avoid that, that would eliminate some of the mechanisms of relapse. But right now, I don't think that there's a strong candidate for that approach. We're waiting for a better next generation for multi-antigen targeted CAR T cells. And obe-cel might be a good platform because it's got, you know, good activity already. It's got longevity. It's got a favorable toxicity profile. So maybe targeting another antigen in a similar way in that construct could be helpful. We'll see.
And then is there any ongoing research in the ALL space outside of CAR T-cell therapy that could also affect the treatment paradigm?
Hopefully with frontline immunologic consolidation, currently blinatumomab, maybe in the future CAR T-cells, a lot fewer patients will be relapsing. But I do think there's still going to be patients that relapse, and so there needs to be the development of additional agents. As far as blinatumomab goes, there will be competitors to blinatumomab, which would be long-acting bispecific CD19-directed antibodies. There's already a candidate that's in phase 1-2 trials from AstraZeneca that may prove to be efficacious. And if it's, you know, shown to be efficacious in the relapsed refractory setting, it has a good toxicity profile, it could be looked at in the frontline setting as a competitor to blinatumomab. And then, you know, if it works out well, it would be, you know, something that wouldn't need to be a continuous infusion like blinatumomab, but it could be given, you know, as an antibody injection every few weeks. So that's one thing that I think will develop and become a competitor to the current approach. For relapsed refractory disease, I think we still need to explore other options. There are ongoing studies looking at BCL2 inhibitors like venetoclax and finding the right combination with chemotherapy or immunotherapy. And I think there's a lot of avenues still to explore there. And then again, I don't think we've necessarily tapped every single antigen that could potentially be targeted. So there's still a role for development of other immunotherapies, either bispecifics or antibody-drug conjugates or CAR T cells for those patients that do kind of get through the current chemo CD19-directed therapy, be it Blin, an alternative to Blin, or CAR T cell. So hopefully we'll continue to see studies, but I do think that the population of relapsed refractory ALL is going to be diminishing because the frontline therapy is much better now.
What would be your main message for colleagues regarding the evolving role of obe-cel and CAR T-cell therapy overall in ALL?
All patients with ALL, either Ph positive or Ph negative, should be seen by an academic hematologist, you know, hopefully early after their diagnosis, so that even if they are doing well with chemotherapy, they can get blinatumomab consolidation. If they're not able to get it locally, they can get it at an academic center. And then the academic hematologist can be aware of those patients so that if they do show a progression, there can be consideration for early implementation of obe-cel at an MRD status, as long as you can confirm the expression of CD19. Giving obe-cel with low disease burden might be a great way to definitively treat the relapsing ALL with obe-cel. And then I think, you know, hopefully people who manage ALL across the country will never consider age to be a barrier to therapy, should never be a barrier to frontline therapy. There hasn't been a patient of any age that I've denied therapy to for over a decade because we have a lot of these great tools. So hopefully the availability of obe-cel and its good performance in older patients, good toxicity profile in older patients will encourage physicians who don't see that much ALL to still refer to academic centers for patients that they maybe started with some low intensity therapy and the patients are progressing. They could go to an academic center and get obe-cel and potentially do very well even without a post CAR T cell transplant. So hopefully the distinguishing feature of obe-cel, the toxicity profile, is really going to encourage people to refer their patients for consultation and really give it some consideration at the appropriate stage of therapy.
Brexucel is already being tested in the frontline setting. That's an investigator-initiated trial that we developed at Moffitt, and we're trying to now expand at MD Anderson, UPenn, and Albert Einstein. We'll have a trials in progress abstract that we submitted to ASH. Summarizing that, their obe-cel is also planning at least three, as far as I know, frontline studies in Europe and the U.S. to explore what that would look like in higher risk patients. And so we'll start to see some of that data evolve. In terms of the split dosing, it's a operational challenge still for a lot of centers. And so, you know, if we really want to see obe-cel use increase, we're going to have to figure out how to deliver it in a way that's easier. What we're going to do first at our site is really try to narrow the time between doses for the low tumor burden patients. We want to ensure that there's safety first. And, you know, because this was never, you know, studied on the obe-cel trials, we want to generate some data and try to understand, hey, can we do this? And if we can, then I think the next place to take it is in the higher tumor burden setting, you know, those with greater than 20% plus. I think the next question, if we're going to go into that higher tumor burden setting, do we change the dosing approach, right? Do we come in with 100 and so for less than 20%, it's 100 million cells, then 310. For greater than 20%, it's 10 million, then 400. Can we use the same dosing approach for both? I mean, again, I'm trying to reduce those, you know, those operational challenges as much as I possibly can. And so a year from now, 2 years from now, whenever we have the data, everyone is getting exactly the same thing. They get 100 million cells on day zero. And if we're splitting the doses and they have no, you know, CRS after that initial priming dose, you know, 310 million cells on, you know, the sort of next time point for when we choose to infuse the cells, and then we run from there. And I think that's very doable. I mean, I've looked at the expansion data, you know, the PK data that are part of the New England Journal paper, and I think it's very achievable. And again, you look to other products like Tisagen Leclusal, they had a very similar problem, you know, and here they didn't have the low affinity binder. The main challenge was cytokine release syndrome, right? When they were putting in all those cells. And so Noel Frey from UPenn had developed this protocol for just splitting the dose over 3 days, right? 0, 1, and 2. You get your dose split, and as long as you don't have any, you know, CRS, you get the full dose on day three and you run with it. And here we have the low affinity binder. So I think the CRS challenge is going to be much less. And so what we'll probably have to think about is, okay, I mean, are we going to be okay with transient, you know, high grade ICANS? I'm going to make it up. If we get to an ICANS rate of 10%, but it's transient, it lasts a couple of days and it goes away. But in exchange for that, by putting in the cells early, by doing all the things we do, we get better, deeper responses, and we see less in the way of low blood counts at day 30. I think that's going to be a win, right? I don't think, you know, we don't see a lot of mortality related to CRS and ICANS, okay? The mortality is the low blood counts we have on the back end. That's what drives the poor survival. And so if we can do things to minimize that, and I think it's going to change the ballgame. Now the question is, what are we going to use if it's a safe and effective product for everybody? Is Kite out of the game? And you asked a second question, where are we going with CAR T? And the answer is absolutely not, right? I mean, Kite's not sitting on their hands, right? They've got a 1920, bicistronic CAR that they developed. There are also several 1920 tandem CARs. I think that there's really an interest for trying to figure out how we go into this space with lower toxicity, with greater activity. Thinking about how to build these CARs in, it's going to be a process. And this is what I was saying earlier in my commentary. I think the question then is, what is the next generation of trials going to look like? Are we really talking about randomizing CAR against CAR? Are we talking about going into post-CAR settings and trying to ask what is a meaningful endpoint? So these are really, really, really tough questions to answer. And I'll tell you that, you know, one thing that you have to give credit for, Dr. Prasad, who's now, you know, leading CBER at the FDA, he wants randomizations. He wants to see that the data really align, you know, with what is the best current standard of care. And so I think that necessarily puts pressure on pharma. And at the same time, I hope gives our patients better opportunities, right, to make sure that whatever they're getting is the best true standard of care, so that we safely carry new therapies forward. I do think that the 1920 is very interesting. It's very compelling. And, one of the questions I'm going to have is, what happens if we're in a world where safety, meaning the transient things, the CRS, the ICANS, these things get remarkably better, but the efficacy is the same? Is that a product that makes it through the FDA sort of, now with this new regulatory approach, is that something that is it merits an FDA approval? Does being able to deliver to outpatient merit an FDA approval? You know, what are the criteria that we're going to use as we start going into these randomized trials of CAR on CAR and all the things that, again, I'm just using a crystal ball, maybe coming to fruition, but, you know, you asked a hard question, you know, answering where we're going with obe-cel, that's easy. But answering where we're going with CAR on a bigger level as a field, I think that's it's actually exciting. I mean, I'm not at all like nervous. I mean, I'm not anxious about it. I'm actually like, I hope you can sense that in my voice. I'm actually like, this is going to be really cool. You know, we're going to be able to say, not with a propensity score weighted analysis, we're going to be able to say, hey, we gave this CAR, and we stratified our study based on these risk characteristics. This one won in this setting, and this one won in this setting. And now we're going to have to be stuck on the back end saying, okay, whichever company is sponsoring this trial, how do we tell the story? I think it's going to be so cool.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, supported by Autolus. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.